We can do this in the corporate world. Bosses and managers can easily lord it over people. One of the things I see is often, not always, I'm not a statistician, would never say always about this, but often those bosses and those managers who give life don't have to do as much hiring because people want to stay there, right? Some places have a lot of turnover, and that's usually because the boss is running things with an iron fist. What about the other side? Do you want to, invest in someone, build them up, encourage them, train them, and then what? They might leave and go to your competitor. Are we about keeping it in here, or are we about, great, isn't that a good thing? Your training, your input, the way you live as a Christian has now moved out into the world. Isn't that what the Bible calls us to do, to bless the nations? Is it about hoarding it, keeping it, protecting it, or blessing the world? Now, another thing the king is supposed to do is sort of be a representative of the people. One of the old sayings is this: so goes the king, as goes the king, so go the people. Right? The king is like the canary in the coal mine. And we see this, we learn it throughout the Old Testament historical books. We see it over and over. When there's a good king who calls the people to worship well, the people do worship well, and things tend to go well for them. Far more often, we see selfish, abusive, power-hungry kings who use that authority. And of course, that's what happens then. As goes the king, so go the people. So, in order to better understand who we are, I think it helps us to understand who our king is, right? If we are going to go the direction of the king, what's the king do? You probably know by now that this king that David is talking about is Jesus, who perfectly, by the way, did the role of a king, who worshiped God perfectly, who imaged him perfectly, who completely eradicated and reversed Adam's bad direction. Jesus comes and does it right. He gets it right, finally, and he lives out that role in humility and service, the way kings were supposed to. He served, he washed the feet of his friends, ultimately, quite literally, laid down his life. And then, what is it he says to us? Go and do likewise. Lay down your life. Don't worry about your life, about what you'll eat, what you'll drink. Lay down your life. He who loses his life will find it. My burden is easy. And my yoke is light. We talked about yokes last week. That was in that text we read last week. All the things that we think will give us life come with a burden. Now, isn't that interesting? This is what I think about that. The reality is all of us have experienced yokes from idols, from false hopes that end up crushing us. We've all experienced it, right? Everything has a yoke. There is no, just in case you weren't here, we talked about that last week. That's that thing that goes on the back of an oxen. Everything in life comes with one. You will not live a personally free life. You can't. I can't tell you how many people I've met at the end of the rope, sure that they could live life on their own terms. No, it doesn't work. As human creatures, we have to serve something or someone. All these things that promise life, they come to us with false promises in one hand and a yoke behind their back. And we get up there and we nibble, right? Just like a horse. And then boom, they snap it over our back and we're yoked by it. We're caught in it and we're trapped. And Jesus comes and he says, well, here's my promises and here's my yoke. He tells us right up front, this is the way it goes. We have a choice. We can put on the yokes of all of these false idols, all of these false promises, or we can put on the yoke that Jesus says, here, you can take mine. His is giving ourselves up for the good of the world, blessing others, living not for self-fulfillment, but for others' fulfillment. This is what our king did. As goes the king, so go the people. And he calls us to go the same direction. One thing that I've probably learned over the years is that if we're feeling badly about ourselves, not always, this is not 100% again, I can't say that, but oftentimes, if we're feeling badly about ourselves, it's because we're not being what we were created to be. And there's a disconnect. But that's the other thing that we can learn from this psalm, is that Jesus is the connection, it calls him the priest, the go-between, the connection point to our Creator. See, I think there's a disconnect in all of us. I think there's a longing, an emptiness, a hunger, a feeling of loneliness or aimlessness or meaninglessness. This goes by many words. This, what I call existential angst, can come in many different forms. One is depression, addiction. It comes in a lot of ways. And if you are feeling it, I want you to know this. You are not alone. Many of us here know that experience. I guarantee you, you're not the only one right now who thinks I'm talking to you. We struggle, we suffer because we feel disconnected from our source. Back in the 90s, one of my favorite songs actually was by the Indigo Girls. Some of you will recognize it. Some of you are like, who are the Indigo Girls? But the line, there was this one line in the song that said this, the less I seek my source for some definitive, the closer I am to find. In other words, the more I'm like, whatever, I don't care what my source is, I don't want to know, the better off I am. Remember a few weeks ago I said that one generation's idols become the next generation's tormentors? See, that was my generation's answer to the existential angst. I just won't look. Whatever. We made up that word. Whatever. There's a word for that. It's called apathy. Literally means without passion. Lack of feeling. We created it because we thought it was the answer, and now our kids are dying, literally, because we took away their reason to live. There's no passion. Not seeking our source for some definitive is not the answer. Apathy is destructive, cruel, painful. We were made for pathos, not to live without pathos, right? We're made for it. We need to find it. I promise you this, Jesus can connect us to our source, to our Creator, to give us meaning and connection. Now, I know that there's some of us that are like, mm-mm, not me. I'm not feeling that. I don't feel a longing. I don't feel an emptiness. I'm really happy. You know what that's called? The depths of apathy. You've so numbed yourself to not want to feel that you've chosen not to. And Jesus stands ready to give you a reason to go on, a reason to live, a reason to trudge forward in the face of it. And he is the connection. That's what this says. This guy Melchizedek tells us that he is the Lord. You are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Now, there's this big theological. I'd need to do like a whole sermon series to kind of get at the heart of this Melchizedek character. But he's a priest. He shows up in Genesis 14. Our father Abraham is in need. And this priest shows up to remind him of his connection that he has a connection to his source, to his creator. Melchizedek is there for that. Later, the writer of Hebrews will make a big deal about this guy and how Jesus is just like him in the sense that he is a priest who serves that role, connecting us to our creator. What's the big deal? People need priests. I'm not talking about the title, okay? There's different religions and denominations. I know that's the title of a person who kind of does what I do, sort of. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a person who makes sure that the people know that they are loved, that they are accepted, that they are okay. In many religions, the priest serves the role of communicating to the people that you need not feel lonely. You need not feel empty. You need not feel hopeless. You need not feel guilt. You are loved. This is a real struggle. I think it's a particularly big struggle for us. And this is one reason, and I'm not trying to throw rocks, but this is why I don't personally go by that title. Because you don't need me. Far too many people think they need me to connect them to their source, and I'm telling you, you are going to short circuit. I am not it. At the very best, I think of my job as like, you know those things, some extension cords have that little thing on the end that kind of like holds it? You plug it in, and then that little thing wraps around and kind of gets it in there, hold it there? That's the closest thing I can find to my job description in connecting you. I'm just trying to point. Say, here's the source. Jesus is the source, not me. If you're looking to me to fill your needs, I promise you, you're going to come up empty. Jesus is our connection. He felt what we felt. He was one of us. He suffered more painfully, more deeply than most of us can imagine. He was abandoned and betrayed by his closest friends. We're not just talking about the bully on the schoolyard. We're talking about the people he trusted the most ran away from him. Some of them denied him, betrayed him. In the moment of his deepest need and the physical pain he felt, thanks to God and modern medicine, none of us will ever have to experience the type of physical pain that he felt. He knows the pain and the trauma of humanity. And he lives, sits at the right hand of God the Father Almighty. And you know what he does there? He looks at you. He looks at your shame, your guilt, the things you carry, the longings that you have, the failures, the mistakes. And he leans over and he says, it's okay. It's one of mine. Now I know that for some of us, this sounds good, and for others of us, that's just not quite enough. You're at the right hand of God, and that's all you've got to say? She's one of mine? How about make it go away? And I get that. But look, he knows what that feels like too. He knows what it feels like to sit there in the deepest, darkest pain and cry out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Now, I know for some of us that still comes up short, but let me just point out one thing. That's not the end of the story. Sometimes a longer perspective helps. I think sometimes you and I can be a little bit like the 3-year-old who lost their tricycle or it was run over. Somehow the tricycle got damaged, right? And they're screaming at their parents in the car seat, in the back seat of the car, yelling at them, you hate me, why would you let me endure this? And their parents are on the way to Toys R Us. And they just don't know. Sometimes that can be our situation because time is longer. And that's the other thing that we see, verses 5 through 7. He will shatter kings on the day of his wrath. He will execute judgment among the nations, filling them with corpses. He will shatter chiefs over the wide earth. He will drink from the brook by the way, therefore he will lift up his head. It is not over. It is not over yet. Shatter kings. That's a strong language. Shatter. We talked about kings. Let's talk about kings. Kings that are poor representatives of authority. You know what I think? I think of the girl I know whose father should have loved her and abused her, who did not care for her the way he was called to and only hurt her instead. That man will be shattered. His authority over her is already shattered. There's much more to come. This line, he will fill the nations with corpses. That's not always something we associate with being in the Bible, is it? We don't think, yeah. We come to the Bible, we want inspirational, uplifting. We don't want to think about an imagery that looks like a clip from The Walking Dead or the Game of Thrones or something, right? That's not what we're looking for. But it's here. He will fill the nations with corpses. That man, and far too many like him, those will be those corpses piling up. And I don't know about you, but man, that's refreshing. We talked about oppressors last week. What are your oppressors? What are the things? Maybe it's some trauma, somebody in your own story who should have cared for you and loved you and hurt you instead. Maybe that's an oppressor that stands. Maybe it's inanimate, addiction. Maybe I just can't get free from this thing, or poverty, injustice. Maybe it's some hidden shame from something in your story, either you've done or maybe it was done to you. Just think of the idols, the things, even for some of us here know very well what it means to have this idol that's calling at us, and we can hear it, and it's so seductive. We might know it's not healthy for us, but man, we kind of want to go there. Those idols, they're oppressing you. Those are our oppressors. Those are the bodies that will litter the nations. All the things that harass us, all the things that harm us, Jesus is coming to slaughter them. And that is a comfort. And you know what is happening even now? It's happening right now. We can see it. This is an ultimate and full and final reality, but some of you here know exactly what it's like. Some of you have already seen those bodies drop. Some of you have seen just significant victory in different areas that Jesus has wrought for us. But there is a final one coming. When Jesus lifts his head, like the warrior king that he is, surveys the... I mean, that scene is so powerful to me. I imagine him getting a drink by the brook, right? And he lifts up his head and the weapons just fall to the ground. Some of the bodies fall to the ground. He takes a deep breath, looks around and says, I make all things new. Who are we? We are people whose story this is. We are people who will be standing behind him on that day, knowing that he has fully and finally saved us, protected us, cared for us, this king, this priest, this warrior. We have a king who will have victory over his and our oppressors. See, this truth, I think, gives us hope. It gives us courage to bless the nations. Like I said, some of us have seen the bodies drop. We just need the courage to stand up and say it. Because here's the thing. Some of us here have seen victory in certain areas of our lives. And there's somebody else here who's struggling, who's sitting in that right now thinking, I'll never be able to do it. I can't do it. They don't need me to point them to Jesus. Not right now. They need to know that He worked for you. We need to be people who are not afraid to use our real name. People who are not afraid to stand up. If you want to share a story where you've seen Jesus drop bodies in your past, I want to help you. If you don't want to get up here, I understand. I'll make a video. We can do all kinds of things. I want your church family to hear those stories so that they can have hope. That's what it is, blessing the nations. We can't be a blessing to others. Our story's not a blessing to others if we don't tell it. We need to bless others. We need to live in light of kingdom come, knowing that Jesus is winning and we can work alongside of Him. It's because of all He has done, all that He will do, that we are people who can have hope, who can live with meaning, with purpose, and be what we were created to be. People who know who we are and turn around and bless the world around us. Let me pray for us. Lord, thank you for coming, Jesus. Thank you for defeating our oppressors. Help us to know that that is the story that we live in. Amen.